This is Publishing Talks, a podcast about the book industry. I'm David Wilk, your host. Today I'm talking to Andrea Fleck Nesbitt. She is the publishing director, or the digital publishing director, at Workman Publishing. How are you, Andrea?
I'm great, David. Thanks for having me.
Well, I'm really glad to get a chance to talk to you. You recently wrote an article that caught my attention. It was in American Libraries. It was a kind of, you know, I think it was a sort of general article, but it was, as you called it, a publisher's perspective on ebooks. And I thought that it was a good summary of where we are and where we have maybe are about, you know, some of the issues that are on people's minds who are in publishing and making ebooks. And I wanted to talk to you about that, you know, kind of range of issues from your perspective. But maybe you could just talk a little bit about your background and not, you know, how you got into the business that you're in.
I'd be happy to do that. So I'm probably one of the few people in the industry that can say I've spent my whole career so far at one publishing house. I've been at Workman for 10 years and started in special markets, was Peter Workman's assistant for a little while, and then started selling to Amazon, obviously on the print side. Took on the online marketing, and once ebooks were launched in 2007, and actually that's not entirely fair. Sony was the first to launch the e-ink device, and obviously there were other ebook devices, the Rocketbook and other e-readers prior to that. But really, we all know that Amazon, with the launch of the Kindle in 2007, was the one who really changed the ebook game for everyone. And so when that occurred in November of 2007, since I was already selling to Amazon on the print side, I took that on. And it's been a really fast and exciting transition into the digital space for me, and I think for everyone in the industry.
Well, I think it certainly has been an amazing 4 or 5 years. And I think, you know, some of the things that you've touched on and some of the things that we've been talking about in the, you know, in the business are, I think your experience may have some, gives you a chance to have some perspective because you're working in a, it's not a big publishing company, but you're certainly an established publishing company with a lot of business in print. So the e-book business, as it's grown, and I presume for Workman it's grown significantly, you know, you don't have to give away any real numbers, but I assume it's a significant percentage of your business now, let's put it that way.
Yeah, it has. Well, and you know, Workman is a really unique publisher, I think, as a lot of folks who know the industry are aware. Workman creates so many products that actually can't be easily replicated in the digital space even now, even as we see growth in the app space and some of the new platforms that allow for added functionality. Workman has always been a creator of product that is, you know, half gift or half toy. So to me, it's sort of an exciting thing to be working on a publisher. Even though I'm on the digital side, it's exciting to work at a publisher that still has print products that are very, very relevant even now. That said, particularly for a division like Algonquin, which is our fiction division, we've seen enormous growth that's either sort of kept up or outpaced what the industry has seen in the past couple of years.
Well, that's actually a good point to talk about a little bit. You know, for a lot of people, the theory is, or maybe even the numbers support, that fiction is really driving the growth of ebook reading. So you've got people who are, you know, maybe they're using Kindle, they might be using Nook, they might be using the iPad, probably reading on their phones, and maybe other devices too. And they're really reading straight text. These seem to be people who are readily, you know, we don't know for sure, but it looks like partially because of convenience, partially because of price, partially because you consume a lot of books, so the reader becomes a kind of amortizable thing, and you know, you can carry your book with you. You don't have to carry 5 books when you go to the beach or go
right
on vacation. All the things that people know really apply to fiction, and you can see that at Workman with Algonquin. But do you see then that the other kinds of books, which I think are more challenging to create compellingly in ebook environments, are also selling. There's a lesser of a business case for it, but it's also, I'm really interested if you've learned from readers kind of what their thinking is, what their behavior is based on.
Right. Well, it's funny. There are two main points that I want to make in response to that. I'll actually start with the latter first, because you're talking about habits of the reader, and one of the things that I want to say is that publishing has changed so much in that publishing has always been a B2B business, so we haven't worked directly with consumers. And in my mind, one of the most exciting things about e-reading is that for the first time, and we're seeing this more and more, we're able to connect directly to consumers. And that's something that's really important, because up until now, we really actually haven't understood who the consumer is. So that's sort of the second piece first. And then to go back to the issue of long-form narrative and that being the dominant form of ebooks right now, that's definitely the case for us. We're seeing most of our sales coming through fiction titles and other nonfiction titles, but long-form narrative titles. So health books, in some cases, we've seen perform relatively well, but again, it's not something where you're interacting with the content in a non-linear way. So anytime you're looking at something like a cookbook or a crafting book, those titles, we still haven't seen really strong sales on them, and the question really becomes, will they take off? And where do we invest in creating the best product possible and the best customer experience? So everybody knows the app space allows for added functionality. So if you're creating, let's say, a cookbook, there are a lot of additional features you can create. If you're putting recipes together in an app, it supports more video sometimes than an ebook, and you can navigate the content in different ways. But apps are expensive to create, and there's a lot of content in the app space that you're competing against. So we really want to see growth in these nonfiction areas in the ebook space, but it's still early days, and it's hard to know that that's actually going to occur.
So what do you think are the factors? This is a really important question, I think. What are the what would ha what would it take to make, I mean, because I think the issue of, the App Store apps give you flexibility, they're more expensive, they sell for less, and there are 500,000 of them, so you can't be found. In the ebook store, and we're not just talking about iTunes, but we're talking about the Kindle Fire now and the Nook tablet. So you have platforms now where you can do multimedia experiences, what some people call enhanced ebooks, other people don't like that title, but ebooks that have other things in them than just text. There are places to put them now, but as you're saying, the sales are fairly low, and a lot of publishers, I think, have experimented and found that there hasn't really been a big market for them. And I guess the question is it that the products are not yet compelling in a new, in a way that would get people to be willing to try them and then buy them? Or is it that the market isn't going to happen at all? I mean, that's sort of an interesting question that some publishers I've talked to have said, and some observers have said, there's no business there, I'm not going to bother. Which is a self-fulfilling prophecy then. You'll never find out because you're never going to try.
I don't know that I necessarily agree with a sort of blanket statement saying that there will never be a market there. Again, I think one of the things I keep trying to reiterate to everyone with whom I speak on the subject is it's still early, so we don't know. But I will say that I actually believe that the biggest competitor of publishers, it's not an issue of vendor and platform at the end of the day. The cannibalization is coming from the web in many cases. So I think cookbooks are a perfect example of that. People are not. When people want a recipe for something, 9 times out of 10, unless they have a favorite cookbook on their shelf, they're not necessarily thinking to go to buy write a full ebook, they're thinking to go to the web and type in whatever the recipe is they're looking for on the web. So I think a lot of the cannibalization of sale for that kind of soft reference, if you will, is coming from the web and not necessarily from ebook versus print books. I think that's not the issue so much. Whether the products ultimately are compelling, I think with the new iAuthor software coming from Apple, we'll see the ability to create much more compelling soft reference titles and in the ebook space. And I'm, you know, it was announced a couple weeks ago, so we at Workman are just starting to experiment with it. But I think if it's going to work, this is the software that will allow us to create more compelling books for those particular genres, whether it's travel or design books or cookbooks or any kind of reference material that's sort of more trade-oriented. So we're really excited about the new software and to see whether it allows us to create more compelling and more useful nonfiction titles.
So let me go back to what you said in the beginning of that, because I think it's really important. Let's say and I agree with you that the web is really the issue for so many kinds of books, probably not fiction so much, but any of the self-help or how to do it. So I was thinking about, this question then goes off in two different directions. One is, does that mean that potentially instead of thinking of an e-book, that the transformation would be more to a book-based web experience? Now, sometimes you could say, well, that's just a website. You know, you could take a book and turn it into a pretty rich website with all of the material that is in that book. And as an example, I'm sure you've talked about this just forever, and that is What to Expect When You're Expecting, one of your biggest books.
Right.
Obviously it's for sale as a Kindle and Nook version book. You have a hardcover and a paperback, and I'm sure that a lot of the resources that are in that book, you would be worried about kind of releasing them in the wild, which is the web.
Sure.
But is there a way? I mean, so that leads to one question, is could you have something that is like a book in a browser, or if that's too scary for publishers, does that mean then that in order to compete with the web, you have to build something that's really compelling as an experience that makes it worth enough people's while as readers to come and find you and buy what is still now a container? And this goes to the bigger question, are containers at risk? The print book is a container, so is the ebook, because it contains the information and can be sold as a unit. And is the web really, when you say that it's the competition, I think you're right, but then the question is, does the web really ultimately threaten the notion of buying information in containers?
Right. Well, I think the container can be many things. And the way that I would like to sort of think about it and build our business going forward is, and this actually gets back to my earlier point about understanding the consumer and working with them directly. I think what you need to do and what publishers really need to focus on is building communities, direct-to-consumer relationships, and really understanding what the consumer is interested in purchasing. I think well-curated content is key for publishers. There's always going to have to be a curation process, and so the editorial piece remains really important. What we need to figure out is how we're delivering that well-curated information and how much consumer feedback we want to sort of take in and make a part of that process. So, from my perspective, I would love to see us start to really build out those communities, build out the platforms, whether they're in something like parenting or travel or the children's space, build the communities and then provide various ways that our readers can actually consume the content. So if it's let's say it's a cooking site, and this is all hypothetical, I'm not necessarily saying we're working on any of these projects specifically, but let's say we're building out a website that's specific to cooking, and we're going to have, you know, sort of all-you-can-eat recipes on our site, and there's some compelling and specific reason why people would come to our website on cooking and, you know, be a part of our community. When they get to the point of wanting to actually consume that content, maybe they want an a la carte model where they're able to pick and choose. Maybe it's a subscription model. Maybe they want to be able to build their own container. So they want an ebook and they want to pull in the recipes that they want, and they want to be able to customize that. So it's an exciting and a scary time because in some ways, we'll understand better what the consumer actually wants and hopefully can respond to that in a nimble way. And we have the ability to deliver the information in many different containers as opposed to just one print container.
Right. So, but it's challenging for publishers, I would think.
Absolutely. And the challenge, of course, is, and we've talked a little bit about this in the past, David, the challenge, I think, from the publisher's perspective is there's been a traditional model for, you know, hundreds of years, and this is the way we've built our business and the way that we know to distribute content, and so that's not going away. And as much as ebook and digital content has grown for Workman, the lion's share of our business is still print. So we have to maintain that business with all of the overhead costs that are associated with that, and at the same time, experiment in this space. So as it grows, we can be doing everything that we can to make sure we're building the digital business alongside maintaining that traditional print business.
Yeah, no, I think that's right. I think you're talking about having to bring to publishing a set of skills and knowledge base and maybe even talents that publishers have never had to engage before, especially
right.
When you talk about community building and being in touch with the consumers directly. Those are things that publishers have never, most publishers have never done. And so, you know, that's been a challenge, I think, because, you know, and as you, there's sort of this underlying issue. You know, Workman is a good example. You're a print publisher first. You have ebook and e-publishing alongside the existing infrastructure. You want to maintain your existing business. That doesn't want to go away because you're it's making you money. It's what drives your
right.
business.
Yep.
And yet you have to build this new thing side by side. Now, I know Dominique Rocca at Sourcebooks talked about this a couple of years ago as a challenge for her business, which she has engaged, you know, and has spent a lot of time and money building essentially a second business that runs side by side with the old one. And over time, maybe informs the old one, you know, that the print business can learn something from E, certainly can be beneficial. And E can, you know, obviously contains many of the same elements that print does, of course. But, you know, how do you deal, I'm not asking you specifically for working, but you could answer it in that way. How does a publisher manage those two things congruently so that, you know, it's hard. I mean, how do you do it?
It's tough, you know, I think that Sourcebooks is sort of the poster child for doing this as successfully as we've seen so far. F&W's done a great job of running those two businesses sort of side by side, and it's something that I grapple with frequently because, you know, we have my department, which is the digital department, and we work sort of side by side with the other departments at Workman, but at this point, most of the work that we do is separate from the print business. And for the past, you know, year and a half or 2 years, I've been saying we have to figure out a way to integrate the digital workflow and the digital production into the business from acquisition editorial all the way through production and distribution, and it needs to be part of the fabric of the company. At the same time, in order to be nimble and to experiment, you do have to keep them separate. At some point, I do think they'll come together and it will be one business. But right now, we're still really running two parallel businesses so that we can be a little bit more nimble in the digital space and try out new things. But ultimately, it will be one thing. So, you know, you'll be creating content and then there will be multiple outputs. But it's tough, I think, for most publishers to figure that out because most of their resources still are going toward the print product.
So do you have community people working now for you? I mean, they may not be employees. They could be outside contractors. But do you find that that's something that you have? I mean, have you already done that at Workman? Is that something you think you will do?
In terms of building the direct-to-consumer relationships that I was discussing earlier?
Yeah, the community. So let's say you were talking about cookery, which you're very strong in, or parenting, which you're strong in. You know, is this something that you see happening for you, or are there other publishers that serve as models that you think actually would be doing those things?
Well, and again, I point to F&W because they have done such a great job of, in the past, I would say 4 years, really transforming their business to a business that's based around their communities or their verticals. They're very strong in crafting. I know that they have several crafting sites. They have woodworking. They have several different, I think it's 26 different communities. So they've done that really well. It's something that we're looking at the assets that we have. We have authors who have very strong communities. So how do we help transform those communities into something that sort of has an e-commerce piece to it and really helps to strengthen the brand of those authors? It's hard to build community sites from the beginning because you have to start with something. And again, looking at cooking is a tough space because there's so many wonderful, robust sites already out there. So it's looking at the list and saying, where are the other areas where we're strong and where we can either look to an outside partner or we can start building these communities from the ground up. And I think one of the things publishers need to start doing is to look outside of our industry to see how others are doing it and to possibly, you know, hire either on a freelance basis, as you mentioned, or to actually bring in staff members to have sort of that direct marketing experience that may not have publishing experience necessarily.
Yeah, I think that, I think that's something that many publishers are contending with, that you're looking at different kinds of skill sets. They may come from either the content areas themselves, or they may come from technology businesses.
Right.
I could even see video games, you know, being a source of talent for a lot of publishers. So, you know, thinking about now we've talked a little bit about community, which I think is sort of the software aspect of this, but maybe we could talk a little bit about the other part of that issue, or the issues of digital publishing, which is hardware. You know, we have now a bigger range of hardware. There are some software issues that are related to all of these devices that I think are still challenging. You alluded to it a little bit in your article that publishers are now dealing with multiple formats. I mean, if you think about print books, you know, a book is a book. I mean, yeah, you can maybe add some features to a book, you know, there's a hardcover versus a paperback, but essentially the technological language of printing and publishing has been pretty solid. You don't have to create for different formats within the book. In other words, a print book can be read by anybody.
The print book is the hardware. It's both the hardware and the software. And so in the past, publishers have controlled their own hardware, and the thing we're running up against now is we have no control over the hardware.
Right, and that's a real challenge for publishers, I think. So, but notwithstanding that issue, the fact that this is the case, you know, and you obviously have to deal with it, but I guess my interest is, how do you see that evolving? Do you think it's really possible that 5 years from now there will still be, you know, four or five or maybe even more different devices that you're working for, you know, building output for, even two different, right now we have two and really kind of an emerging three, maybe even four different file formats that you have to work in because there's no standardization.
Right. Yeah, and I know publishers have long wished that the vendors would come together and accept one universal file format, but from a business perspective, they have no motivation to do that. So we can create EPUB 3. It may be accepted by some of the vendors. It's not going to be accepted by everyone. And unfortunately, I don't see in the next 4 or 5 years a real change in that. I think we're still going to have at least three major vendors who are going to accept at least three different formats, but in some cases, we have vendors who take three formats themselves. So it's not even so much an issue of, this file format goes to Barnes and Noble, this one goes to Amazon, and this one goes to Apple, and this one goes to Google. In some cases, we have vendors who take a PDF, an EPUB, a fixed layout title or file, an enhanced EPUB, but part of it would work and part of it doesn't. So it's really a mess right
Well,
now.
and that actually goes back to exactly what we were talking about before, which is what are the impediments to the adoption of new ideas in ebook production? I think this to me seems like the most obvious impediment. If you're a publisher, it makes it even more challenging and less likely that you'll have success if you have to build five or six different formats. Or right now, let's say you wanted to do an ebook which has features. Some of those features will work on the iPad. Some of them won't work on a Nook. Some of them won't work on a Kindle Fire. There are all kinds of problems, and it segments the buying audience as well. So, if you and it's kind of awkward because if you promote a product and the best version of it is only available to a segment of the audience, that's not necessarily a positive. Some people will complain, and you don't want to have unhappy customers. So, what you're talking about seems to me actually answers my earlier question really well, and that is there is a huge impediment to the kind of ebooks with features gaining market share.
Well, and I think that the customer is confused right now. I don't think that they really understand what it means to have embedded video in an ebook, and it's confusing, for example, that Amazon actually does support video for ebooks if the customer has downloaded their app for the iPhone or the iPad, but they can't actually get it right now on the Kindle Fire, which seems crazy because the Kindle Fire plays video. But and I know that's something that they're working on, but there's real confusion in the marketplace for consumers, and I think that's a huge impediment as well, which is, we're creating these products, but publishers can do a better job of marketing them and making it clear what features they have, but also the vendors need to do a much better job of making it clear to their customers what the value add is to those products that have some kind of enrichment.
Right.
And
Well,
I go ahead.
well, I was just going to say a lot of people in the book business have said we haven't come up with products that have the enough compelling features to make people really feel that they're important. That it isn't enough to just add video to a book, or I mean, there has to be a good reason, not just in kind of internally or consistently with the value of the book itself, but for the reader, that readers have to find the product itself compelling in a new way, in a meaningful way. Otherwise, why bother?
It needs to be both interactive and intuitive, and I think we haven't seen products thus far that are those two things. The video experience is often jarring, and I think also, and this is one of the reasons why I'm excited having taken a look at the iBook author software. It's sort of asking, the software is asking publishers to rethink the content and the product from the beginning instead of trying to squeeze a print book into a digital space. And I think that's the other sort of problem we have right now is we need to rethink these products and what they are and what they could be and say, this is not a conversion. This is not a conversion from a print book into an ebook. This is a new product with new features, and we may be taking the text material may be the same, but maybe we're going to build out other assets that are beneficial to the digital product, and it's okay that the layout isn't the same, and it's okay that the information isn't sort of laid out in the same linear way, because maybe there's a better way to consume this information digitally.
So have you run across any, or are you involved in any projects where the book is being conceived of as a product to include its multiple formats? So you think about it as it might be an ebook in this new way, as well as a book, but you're designing it from the ground up for two different platforms or two different reading experiences.
Yes, and that's something we're starting to do now. The funny thing is that I'm starting to think about ebooks as traditional ebooks as well as new ebooks. So you have the print book, you have the old traditional ebook, and then you have these new versions of ebooks. So they're already. And sort of conversion on the back end from a print product seems like the traditional form of ebooks. But what excites me is the idea, and we're starting to experiment with some of this in-house, is saying, okay, you know, we've acquired this particular book, and we're at the beginning of making something new. And we know how to do the print book. This is what it's going to be. But simultaneously, as we are creating that, we're pulling out the text from that. We're taking a look at it. We're building new assets that will make this a rich experience on the digital side. And so there's this parallel production process of doing the two products at one time. So we'll have two very different end products, hopefully. But then, of course, the big question is, are they going to sell? And, you know, we spent... When the fixed layout format came out from Apple last year, we were pretty excited about that because we thought it would be a great way for some of our illustrated books to be rendered and created. And we spent a fair amount of time working on them and making some really, really pretty illustrated books. But the return on investment has still been minimal. So, again, you know, you want to create these products, you want to get them out there, but it's still anybody's guess whether they're going to sell. And that sort of brings us back to where we started in the beginning.
Right, which is always the problem for any new, new technology. If you sort of think about when personal computers were first invented, they were very modest, shall we say.
Right.
And they weren't really broadly, I mean, it took years for people to, for computers to inhabit people's lives. And it took a wide range of other factors, not just, having the machines, but having software that would actually make people's lives better. And then having
right.
the web and, you know, all these things that, you know, it took 30 years. And I, you know, it may be that, for ebooks, that the Brave New World part of imagining
right.
a future, it takes a long time, and it takes what I think of as the interaction between the creator, the product, and the consumer.
And the end user, yeah.
Yeah, and there's a lot of interplay there where you try things out. And, of course, some people come up with great ideas that seem really cool. And as you say, they don't find an audience for whatever reason. Sometimes it's because they're ahead of their time. Sometimes because there really isn't an audience big enough, even though the product is really cool.
Right.
And sometimes then the next person learns from those experiences of the, maybe you learn from your own mistake, or somebody else learns from what you did, and then the next version does a little better. And
right.
I think we're still, as you said at the very beginning, we're in this very, very early stage of a, you know, really dynamic business. But do you see, and I think we only have a couple more minutes, but do you see, I mean, looking ahead, if you had to pick out one impediment that you would like to see overcome, and then pick out one really great opportunity that you think opens up a lot of possibilities. I mean, and if you don't think of one, that's okay, but I'm just wondering if there is one.
Well, you know, the impediments at this point are many. But I think what I would love to see is the sort of the publishing industry. I think for many years we've been a very insular industry, and so it's an issue, I think, of education and sort of changing the mindset of how publishers view themselves and opening them up to this idea of experimentation and working hand in hand with media partners outside of our own book business. And, you know, we're not just book publishers anymore. And I think sort of changing that mindset internally for publishers is something that is so important. And so I would say to any publisher, the most important thing that you can do is to educate your staff. So it's everyone in the company, and it's something at Workman we've been trying hard to do. So we meet with the sales department and everyone from the editorial department to our customer service and credit departments to help them understand what the new space is and what we're working on, so that we can start to perceive of ourselves as a media company and sort of open up and experiment in these spaces. And again, I think building out the consumer relationships and sort of finding other industries to sort of point to is really important.
I think that's great. No, that's a really good answer to my kind of, you know, maybe not so well formed question. So, I really wanted to thank you for having this conversation. It's been really great for me. I hope it's great for others. And, you know, I wish you luck with what you're doing at Workman.
Well, thank you, David. I really appreciate you inviting me to do this. It was lots of fun. I had a great time, and let's do it again sometime.
Sounds good.
All right.
This is Publishing Talks, a podcast about the book industry. I'm David Wilk, your host, and I've been talking to Andrea Fleck Nesbitt, who is the Digital Publishing Director of Workman Publishing. Thank you.